Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is the exclusive radio home of the Chicago Bulls.
Ball, another left wing three. Yes! Back-to-back jacks! Lonzo Ball!
We are Sports Radio 670 The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. An Odyssey station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by the law offices of Jeffrey M. Leving.
Banks it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Stop it! Do not do him like that!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh my goodness! Did you not get the memo?
Mully at Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to KC Johnson, and he joins us on the guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. KC, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Well, we're kind of curious. The Bulls are catching 2.5 points, believe it or not, in Cleveland, and Cleveland's been good, and they've got guys that are scoring, you know, Darius Garland and Jared Allen and Lauri Markkanen, I believe, is their third double-figure scorer. How about that? Remember him?
Yeah, Lowry's played well since he came back from his own little bout with COVID. His overall stats for the season are pretty comparable to what he did here, but since he's come back, he's really shot at a high level. And you know, the Cleveland's trying that experiment that the Bulls tried a little bit with him at the small forward and playing that big lineup. Evan Mobley's been fantastic for them. It's working. It's an intriguing young team, and they've dealt with injuries and still, you know, played pretty competitive basketball. So it should be a good matchup tonight for sure.
What's realistic in terms of how long to expect DeMar DeRozan to be out, KC? And in that absence, who do you think, if there's any one guy or maybe a couple guys who need to step up?
Yeah, so, I mean, DeMar's in that situation where he's got to be sidelined for at least 10 days or produce two negative tests in a 24-hour span. So, you know, typically when a player is placed in that, it usually lasts the 10-day situation. So that's kind of where I think the Bulls are bracing for and kind of what I'm expecting. Other things have happened that have been different than that, but for the most part, when guys are in that situation, that's been their absence. I mean, Vucevic, you know, lasted that long, missed 7 games. White and Green right now. I mean, let's face it, guys, the Bulls are dealing with an outbreak. You can call it, you can try to sugarcoat it if you want, but it's not quite the level that the Hornets is, obviously, but you know, they've got 3 players currently in the health and safety protocols. You know, Stacey King shared his news. It's not a great situation around the team right now in terms of the COVID situation. You wish speedy recoveries and good health for everybody involved. As to who needs to step up, you know, my eyes are on Zach LaVine. I mean, he played a fantastic game last game, is from my perspective, because he showed you he still has that ability to take games over, particularly at that end of that third quarter. He kind of moved into takeover scoring mode, but he also had a very strong decision-making game, finished with a season-high 8 assists, and just really looked in command throughout. I mean, he reminded you that, oh yeah, you know, this guy used to be a number one option guy before DeMar DeRozan came and started playing at MVP level. So, Zach, a lot's going to be on Zach's plate in DeMar's absence, and I expect him to respond accordingly.
Yeah, I said that we talked about it earlier, like what element of his game was most impressive, because he had, as Billy Donovan said, a very complete game. And I thought working as the facilitator was the thing that really kind of impressed me, because he got his 32 points and we know he can score, but he got Vooch involved when Vooch was struggling. He got him a couple layups where you thought like, wow, he's really making sure he's taking care of people, and he's effortless about it. I was so impressed by the game he played.
I also thought Mully, he had a strong game defensively. And yep. I'm glad you brought up Vooch, though, because I think that's been an added element to his game and an added level of maturity to his game, is the recognition of, you know, playing two-man game maybe with a guy who is struggling a little bit. And, you know, Vooch has had obviously some issues at the start of the season, but he's been playing better since he came out of the COVID protocols. So yeah, that's just, you know, kind of where his game has gone to. And to me, you know, he's playing at a level that you're almost kind of overlooking at times because of how great DeRozan's been. I mean, DeRozan has been just unbelievable. So you've almost kind of taken LaVine a little bit for granted at times, but if you've watched him closely, his defensive growth, his decision-making growth, his maturity level, to me, have all kind of, you know, maybe not taken a dramatic step forward this year, but taking a little bit of an advancement enough to notice if you're watching closely. And I fully expect him to be an all-star again this year.
Admitting that this is getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but that is kind of what we do here.
Yeah.
If Io continues to progress, how much more will that free the Bulls up to consider trading Coby White for somebody who they might need, a big or something else that they might need if you have a duplicate at, you know, in the backcourt, or you just are trying to, you know, trade for something you don't have?
I mean, it's certainly a fair question, and David, and an open debate, and, you know, I get this question a lot. I would say several things on this. First of all, I'm not sure what kind of trade value Coby White has. I mean, let's be frank about it. I mean, first of all, he's had very high moments and splashy moments, and I've always kind of been a Coby White backer because I think I value shooting and I like scoring because I'm, you know, defensively challenged Division III washed up player myself. So I prefer offensive basketball. So. So I've always kind of been a Coby White backer, but let's just be frank. I don't know what kind of trade value he has. He's coming off shoulder surgery.
Right.
Then he you know, struggles to find his rhythm. Then he lands in the protocols. When he comes out of that, you don't know what you're going to be getting. He's going to, you know, he's nearing extension talk time. And that's, you know, teams that might be interested in trading for him have to factor that in. You know, what is he going to be looking for? Now, he doesn't have to sign an extension next summer, but he's eligible. You know, if it doesn't happen, then becomes a restricted free agent, et cetera, but that's another component that you're weighing both from a Bulls perspective and for a team that may be trading for him. So there's that. I don't really see Io and Coby as duplication. I really don't. That said, I get your premise, and it is obvious that Io has just completely exceeded expectations and taken rotation minutes that most of us that follow the team assume we're going to Coby White. Coby to me is more of a scoring specialist, kind of give you a boost off the bench, you know, can get hot in a hurry. I mean, he's put up multiple 30-point games in the NBA. I don't see Io doing that as good as he's been. But yes, it's certainly a question I assume that management is weighing. And yes, I don't think the Bulls are as undersized across the board as most people think, but they're certainly undersized up front. So, you know, flipping Coby White for a big up front is something that I think you have to consider and have to have on the table.
So, you know, you mentioned Io, and I think everyone is super impressed by the way that he's played. And you know, and David pointed this out, I hadn't really thought about it, but maybe there's a chip on his shoulder going into the second round. But there's a reason that he wasn't drafted early, and that's because he's not like an NBA type scorer, right? But he's breaking his rear end and he's playing a complete game and he's doing a lot of really good things. And you like everything you've seen from him, but he's also on the right team for him. He's also on a team where he's not asked to be that scorer. He's asked to be that kind of energy guy that we see Alex Caruso be and has an unbelievable role, but he's not a 3-point shooter like Caruso, and he's not a guy that is going to really kind of excel in that scorer role. But, you know, he'll drive at the basket. He's fearless. I think there's tons to love about him, but I don't know that that he isn't on the right team in terms of all those things, especially with a guy like Billy Donovan.
That's a really good point, Molly, and one I hadn't really given much thought to. But I would extrapolate that to a couple other guys, although I want to stay on Io. Like, guys like Derrick Jones Jr., you know, I mean, he's a guy who fallen out of rotation in Portland, and he gets on a team, and, you know, what they're asking him to do and the way he fits around with the pieces around him just make him flourish in that role. And I'll quickly quickly brought it to talk about management, and that's where you got to give management a lot of credit for this vision and for this roster. They obviously could not have predicted that I was going to drop to the second round and he would fall to their laps. But just the way they pick these complementary pieces and fit them into the collective whole, and how it's kind of drawn out their strengths to make the player more impactful than he might have been on another team. And Io would, I think, be a very good example of that. The thing I always say about Io is he makes you notice him. He gets in the game, and you just immediately, your eyes are on him because he'll do something. It's not always 100% perfect. It's not always 100% positive, but it's always 100% impactful and based on effort and disruption and just impact on the game. And, man, he is just, I wrote the other day, he's found money. I mean, that's a second-round pick that is, you know, squarely in your rotation and playing like a savvy vet at times. I mean, his defensive intensity, his ability to get to the rim, that's a find right there for the Bulls. And, you know, it's obviously the fact that he's a hometown kid makes the story even better.
Casey, it's only December 8th, but ESPN is the Bulls' fourth in their power rankings. They have as many victories as any team in the Eastern Conference. You've covered a lot of Bulls teams, and the most obvious comparison is you go back to that 2010-2011 team was a lot of fun. Maybe one of the more popular Chicago sports teams that didn't really win anything. And when you compare that group with this one and what's possible for this one, is that a fun comparison? Is one better than the other clearly in your mind, or how do you do that?
The comparison that I draw, David, and thanks for stealing one of my story ideas that's coming up. the comparison that I draw is that it's coming out of nowhere and it's not really quite fully discovered by the national media yet. I think it's people are obviously starting to notice, but it's like nobody expected this. So I do see comparisons between those two teams. The other comparison I would make is that, you know, Derrick Rose obviously was the MVP that year. And, you know, he was young in his career, and DeMar DeRozan is old in his career, and obviously DeMar has now hit a speed bump. But, I mean, there's no getting around it. DeMar DeRozan is in the MVP discussion as of right now. I'm not saying he's going to win it like Derek did, but he's in that discussion. I mean, his play has just been ridiculous. And the fact the Bulls sit where they sit when nobody expected that to be adds more value to his resume in that part. But, again, you know, Steph Curry's probably the runaway winner as of right now, but, you know, he's on the ballot is my point. So that's the other comparison to it. Obviously, you know, they've got to keep winning. I mean, that team won 62 games, so there's a long way to go for that. But, man, this has just been fun to watch, fun to talk about, fun to write about. It's all positive right now with the Bulls, except for their, you know, COVID situation, which, as I mentioned before, is not good.
You know, the Toronto, they came out, Canada came out saying everybody's got to have the vax card to get into their country starting in mid-January. I just wonder how many of these are kind of, do we even know how many of these are breakthrough cases, guys that were vaxxed and have gotten the virus anyway, and how many of them are guys that weren't vaxxed and is there a concern that some, you know, lingering issues could be there?
Well, if you're talking about just specifically the Bulls case, the Bulls are fully vaccinated.
Right.
So these would be breakthrough cases there.
Yeah.
Now, the league is starting to push on boosters, obviously. And, you know, that's going to be the next hurdle to clear. You know, getting, because there were some hesitant people both, you know, within the Bulls and throughout the league in terms of getting the virus initially. So now you're going to get to the booster stage, and you know the league is starting to make some noise on requiring those. And so, yeah, this is, you know, the mess. Just like, you know, the NBA is part of the world, and the world is going through a difficult time with this virus, and so the NBA is not immune to that. You know, on Toronto, small thing, and you know you got to keep it in perspective in the grand scheme of things. But the Bulls are done with their trips to Toronto as of next week, December 16th.
Right.
So that'll take that off that plate for the Bulls. But, you know, that's it's funny I bring up the 16th because that's 10 days for DeMar DeRozan. So, you know, it's not guaranteed that he'll be out through the Raptors game, but that's kind of where my focus is as of now.
Casey, in your mind, which was bigger, the back-to-back victories in L.A. over the Lakers and the Clips or the back-to-back victories in New York over the Knicks and the Nets?
I'd go the Lakers, the Clippers-Lakers, for a couple reasons. The level that DeRozan played at in both those games, and a little earlier in the surprise factor of the Bulls being as good as they are. And then, you know, to me, the Knicks aren't that good this year. They just, I don't think, and they're kind of a mess right now. And then, obviously, that Nets game was a huge victory, especially with how shorthanded they are. But, I mean, this is kind of ties into your question, David. It's fun to, you know, you're like comparing, like, great moments. I mean, mm-hmm. Who would have thought that in the first quarter of the season, right? So, but I would probably give a small nod to L.A. over New York.
See, I'm going with the New York duo because that's Eastern Conference. And now they got the important tiebreaker. Yeah. So I think yeah. You're right. I think DeMar DeRozan played so well, and that became a national story, and that's where the big push for – but if you think about it, the first time they played the Nets, when you had Durant come out and say they got a couple high-level scores, that to me was like just a glorious moment in the season. I just was so pleased to see him compliment the Bulls.
Yeah, I like how you bring up the conference thing, because I didn't factor that in when I was answering the question. And it's funny because I asked both Billy and DeMar after the Nets went about winning the season series with the Nets, and they looked at me like I was from Mars. Like, what are you talking about? You know, it's like, and I'm like, hey, man, you know, it's like, you get to the end of the season, you're tied with the Nets, top of the conference, you get home court. I mean, I didn't go that far. That's where my brain was
going.
But I mean, it was significant in that. I mean, they only played three times. They won the first two. But both Billy and DeMar looked at me like I was crazy when I asked the question. So that was kind of funny.
Oh, well.
Great what stuff. Are you gonna
do? Thanks, KC. Thanks, appreciate KC. It, bud.
All right, guys. Take care. Good talking to you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.